This is Film Dumpster.
So yeah, I think we're still in the burning books phase.
Yeah.
Of these podcasts. Kind of a no man's land. You know, it's funny, there was a book burning scene in one of the movies we're going to review today, but I'll get to that. But just kind of harkens back to now in the podcast. If you're listening in the future, remember this. Remember what I told you.
And away we go.
So it's
Film Dumpster podcast
201.
Yeah.
Are we totally off? Did we fuck up our numbers? Who cares?
No.
We can start out wherever we want. We were gone so long.
Yeah.
But yeah. So there's that. In the last few months, I got a promotion over at the Writers Guild.
Ooh.
And I got my own office.
Yay.
Ooh. With no windows. Ooh. That's uplifting. That was, I guess, that's kind of a good thing.
Right.
I am now an arbitration coordinator in the credits department of the guild.
That sounds important.
Well, technically, it is one of the more important jobs at the guild. For what we do.
You're important.
Yeah, and stuff. It's interesting. It's kind of stressful because it's not like legal arbitrations per se, but kind of. Legal for the union.
It's
basically
a blood-soaked battle royal.
Right. Yeah. Well, they can get kind of contentious, but these studios are doing this thing now. Here's something, an interesting film tidbit for you, folks out there. But they do a thing what they call in movies now called bake-offs. And
where everybody gets high.
Yeah. Only when Seth Rogen is involved in a bake-off, which I bet he has been.
Nice.
Yeah, totally. But a bake-off is when they hire 3 or 4 different writers at the same time to write the same movie.
Hmm.
Right? And then they pick the script that they want, but they're all hired to write the same thing, so they're all participating writers. So inevitably, no matter who they pick to write, to start the script off, and they'll often go back and forth between different writers and stuff.
Hmm.
But they call it a bake-off, which makes the credit determination process often contentious and a lot more complicated. These studios are, literally, there'll be 28 writers on a movie, which is absolutely bonkers. Now, a lot of them will be like, they do round tables and mini rooms, which also makes things really confusing.
Hmm.
So, but that's it. That, and then there's a lot of garbage in the theater. So there's that. So I did that. But I did something really cool last night.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, there's a couple theaters in L.A. that are pretty relatively famous, especially as, art house cinema goes and, showing old movies and doing cool Q&As and shit, but the Egyptian Theater and the Arrow Theater. And I went to the Arrow Theater last night in Santa
Monica. What's the theme of the Arrow Theater? I know the Egyptian Theater is
Egyptian.
Egyptian stuff.
The Arrow Theater is an old, big, giant theater. Aerodynamic. No, I don't know. It has nothing to do with anything. They're doing a John Woo retrospective that started yesterday and is playing through today. And yesterday I went and saw a double feature on 35mm prints of John Woo's The Killer and John Woo's Hard Boiled, which are arguably two of the best action films ever made. And you can thank John Woo a great deal for modern action.
Yeah.
Like for your John Wick and your, in your Matrix movies and, the modern style of, kind of balletic action sequences.
Yeah.
Well, is something he invented.
Kill Bill.
Mm-hmm. All those movies, so it was a retrospective of those two movies, which are by far my favorite action films and my two favorite John Woo films, but John Woo was also there.
Yeah.
And he came out and there was a moderated discussion with John Woo and the
and
moderator.
The, and the Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah, and the Wu-Tang Clan. And then they did a little Q&A with the audience. So he spoke for about a half hour, and he talked mostly about the Killers.
Did they call it a Woo-N-A?
Yeah, it was a Woo-N-A. He's like, we'd do a Woo-N-A. But yeah, it was really fucking awesome. Like this, it was super nostalgic for me because I remember discovering John Woo in my early 20s, like in the early to like mid 90s, you know, when that stuff would
come
out.
He was your first crush?
He was my first crush. But I mean, I remember when I saw Hard Boiled, I'd never seen an action movie like that before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely over the top and totally insane. And like, you know, and when he talked in between his films, he's like, well, there's a couple interesting points that he made. One, because there's, you know, there's a lot of like religious imagery in his films.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about that, but I guess he's a pretty religious guy. He's a Christian. And I thought that was interesting. He talked about that a little
bit. Did flocks of doves fly out of nowhere when he appeared?
Yes, actually. There was doves on the stage. He was covered in dove shit. But he also said, he talked mostly about making The Killer because it was the first movie of its kind. Nobody had seen action sequences like with guns, you know.
Double guns.
And chase and double guns and
jumping
slow-mo and dissolves that aren't used to dissolve time, but to as an emotional dissolves, which is something you didn't really... He made a film, and he talked about how, I never knew this, that movie had no screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
They made that movie without a script.
They winged it.
And they did. They wooed it. they wooed it into existence. But, which I find incredible, because
yeah,
it has a pretty... It has a very cohesive plot line and an interesting one, actually. It's...
Well, a lot of that can be done in editing, I suppose.
Well, that, but you have to have it constructed in your head and you have to move it forward. And I mean, if you're not going to be shooting in sequence, most likely, so that takes a lot of construction. You know, like...
Doing a jigsaw puzzle backwards.
Mm-hmm. But I found that really interesting, especially considering... how sometimes moving this story actually is. And I mean, yeah, it's 1989. It's got some corny moments, but even those are really brilliant and beautiful in their own way. And he talked about how he liked making a movie. He thought of it like making a poem,
mm-hmm.
you know? But, and then you watch something like Hard Boiled and the action sequences are just beyond anything. And there's no CGI in these things. These are stunt people fucking smashing their fucking faces,
yeah,
you know, and explosions everywhere in that movie and just really out there scenes, like ridiculous, crazy action imagery. And certainly the most dead people I've ever seen on screen. Just the shootouts in that movie are unbelievably epic. And then that opening sequence is so cool. When the whole sliding across the table with the double guns thing.
Covered in flour.
And then, yeah, he lands right on the dude and he's just totally covered in flour. And fucking pops him off screen in the head and the blood just splatters up on him. He spits that toothpick in his face.
Right.
So fucking badass. I remember seeing that. I think that was the first John Woo movie I actually saw. I saw that before I saw The Killer.
And then you were hard-boiled?
Oh, I was fucking hard-boiled. I watched everything he made. Everything. You know, and that was continuing today. They're doing Face Off and Hard Target, which Face Off was a fun movie. I like that one a lot, but Hard Target was, that was his first American film.
Yeah.
And then I think they were doing Bulleting in the Head this evening, which was another incredible movie he did. But yeah, it was really fucking awesome. I dug it. It's one of the things that really made me fall in. I mean, horror beside that, but I really fell in love with the action genre.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of living in Los Angeles.
That's true. It is one of the benefits.
Stumble onto things like that.
And we got a couple of movies we could talk about, a little smaller than last week's movies.
Yeah.
You want to... What do you want to talk about first?
Well,
the small screen or the smaller screen?
The smaller screen, I guess.
Well, there's a big thing that dropped, and we talked about the news last week about Robert Forrester passing, but El Camino, which is the Breaking Bad movie, or a Breaking Bad movie.
Yeah.
What's that?
You don't want to limit yourself in the franchise.
No.
You know, I mean, there could be 50 more Breaking Bad movies. There could be.
But it's been a highly anticipated thing, especially amongst Breaking Bad fans.
And it pretty much gives everybody what they want.
Right. In a fan service sort of way, it does. Yeah. You know, it does good fan service.
Yeah.
And you watch this. I mean, it came out on Netflix. And you watch this movie, which is not really giving anything away because you can tell from the trailer, but, you know, Jesse Pinkman shows back up.
And
picks up shortly
immediately after.
Pretty quickly after that. And you know, you do get to revisit all these characters from the Breaking Bad universe, you know. Yeah. And it did feel like it was like two good episodes of Breaking Bad.
Pretty much.
However, and it was good, and I enjoyed it, and the performances were good, and it was well written. However, there's really no point to it. And that, I think, is its biggest problem. It's
kind of a circle jerk.
Yeah, it is a bit of a circle jerk. And because the way that they ended Jesse's character in the series was him...
Basically the way they ended in the movie.
Right. And it was him bursting through the gates in that stolen El Camino, beat to shit with that beard, screaming his face off, like just like maniacally.
Yeah.
You know, and driving off. And that was it. And that was pretty cool. And then they come back and then they fill in, you know, they tell you what happened to Jesse Pinkman. Right. And then in the end, it was kind of like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes it's the journey.
And it's not that it's bad per se. It just seemed like it wasn't necessary. And as much as I enjoyed it, part of me kind of wishes it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's not to really say, I'm not trying to say it's bad because it's not.
The only other weird thing was,
but that's a problem.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
You know, cause it really wasn't a necessary film to make. And they probably could have done something different if they wanted to. However, you know, if you're a Breaking Bad fan, you know, you're going to fucking watch it. So just watch it.
And I mean, it's got a lot of things. It's got a lot of things that Breaking Bad fans like.
Right.
There's a lot of flashbacks. Like, they play with time a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of the most sort of confusing and simultaneously brilliant sequences in there was when they get to Todd's apartment. And he breaks in, and then you hear Todd's voice talking to the like nosy neighbor guy,
right?
And he just opens the door and starts talking to Pinkman.
Uh huh.
And for a minute you're like, what the fuck is going on? But it's like it just changed to a flashback right there.
But it was weird. There was a couple weird transitions like that, but it was cool.
They do some good stuff like that. There's some good examples of the sort of classic dark humor that they, you know, that they pulled, like with the.
Yeah, no, it is good, you know, and it was like, if it was like, you know, we were watching.
It checks
a couple
all
more,
the boxes.
Yeah, episodes. I don't know. It's just weird that it.
Yeah.
That's where they're going to leave it, but whatever. You know, I mean, I enjoyed watching it. I probably wouldn't watch it again unless I just had to watch the series over again.
Once again. As per usual, I guess you could say Badger and Skinny Pete were highlights of this movie.
Yeah, those guys are so entertaining.
They're always great as a character duo. Uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen them much else.
Me either. But it works.
Yeah.
A lot of the characters, when they bring all the characters back, it's satisfying.
Sure.
You know? So there's that. But hey, it's not, you know.
There didn't seem to be a lot of stakes in this.
No, not a ton. And
that's one of the things that it was missing that Breaking Bad was full of. Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, mortal tension.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little, but not much at all.
Yeah.
And it was pretty brief. But, yeah, hey, You can watch this for, you know, free if you're mooching off of somebody else's Netflix account.
Right.
Or you can watch it on Netflix if you're paying for it, which is, what, $14 a month?
Whatever.
So, yeah, you can do that and get ready for the onslaught. The onslaught of new streaming content coming to you.
Because there's a bunch.
Yeah. Disney Plus is coming out in Quibi. A few weeks. Quibi comes out next year, which I just learned of not that long ago.
Yeah.
And that's a DreamWorks platform,
right.
Streaming platform, which is going to be short form streaming stuff. Sounds fucking weird, but they're putting a ton of money behind it. So yeah, we'll see. Yeah, like $4 billion or something. So
yeah,
that's a lot. So that's coming out. And then, and Apple Plus,
mm-hmm.
which is out very soon, right?
I think it's already available.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it just recently became available. So three streaming platforms coming out within a year of each other.
Don't forget your Hulus and Prime.
Yeah. And of course, you know, well, now, yeah, your Hulus and, you know, yep, your Amazon Primes and your Netflixes and the other streaming channels that are out there.
There's
Shudder and there's all sorts of shit out there to get your content.
Yeah.
Cable is a dying animal.
But on the movie end, Waika Waititi just came out with a pretty impressive movie.
I went and saw, yeah, I really like this guy. Now, Waititi was, he directed and wrote and directed the last Thor movie. He's writing and directing the next Thor movie. He comes from Flight of the Conchords. Mm-hmm. He's a New Zealander, and he was one of the main writers and directors of Flight of the Conchords. What we did in the Shadows. He did our Eagle and Shark. Versus Shark Girl or something like that. I can't remember the name of it, but so he's done a lot of work with Jermaine Clements.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's his new film, and it's called Jojo Rabbit. It stars two completely unknown kids. The one, the lead, the young boy, he's like a 10-year-old. He's a total unknown, never acted before. And then there's another, his little friend in the movie is also kind of an unknown. and then Taika Waititi plays his imaginary friend, Hitler, because he's Nazi youth, this little kid.
Yeah.
You know, and he's very dedicated to the cause. And, you know, he's very impressionable and young, so he doesn't know, you know, he thinks he's being a great citizen.
Right.
But he's just this nice, innocent little kid. Scarlett Johansson plays his mom. Sam Rockwell's in it. He plays this Nazi, this you know, kind of dim-witted Nazi general guy that gets stuck in this little part of Germany. And Rebel Wilson's in it. She's like his assistant.
Wow.
And there is a scene where they burn books in that one. So in this, where she's like,
you can't burn an e-book.
Because they're like basically in charge of these little kids, all these young kids, like training right. them. And it's just kind of ridiculous. But Scarlett Johansson is actually hiding a young young Jewish girl in her attic. And then the boy discovers her and, you know, it's obviously this. And it's very super satirical, but like really lighthearted satire, like...
Mm-hmm.
Definitely hit some strong satirical points, but does it in this really feel-good kind of way. And it's the only bad press I've seen is that it's like, you know, it's a little too feel-goody. But it does remind me of like a satire that like Mel Brooks would have done or, you know, who knows, even Chaplin.
Well,
in some ways.
Chaplin did do a Hitler thing.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. It kind of harkens back to... To that type of satire, but you couldn't do a Blazing Saddles today kind of thing. Like there's certain like that humor isn't quite allowed, but he's able to skirt that and do this really satirical thing where like Hitler is this one of the main characters in it because he's this the imaginary friend of this young boy and
Sure.
And he's a dipshit, and like it's really ridiculous. But certainly a super entertaining film. I actually really liked it. And I think it works really well from that perspective of watching this boy kind of realize what was going on around him, you know?
Yeah.
And just being a good kid, you know, in the end, he was just but yeah, it was funny. Highly entertaining film. And I saw a Q&A with him, which was kind of interesting. Not the best Q&A I've ever attended. He seemed really burnt out on Q&As.
Mm-hmm.
And the moderator was not particularly good. You could tell he was asking him questions he's asked before on some other panel. Yeah. You know?
What's it like playing Hitler?
Right. Right. But yeah, I think that was part of the reason that got made and he was able to get the money was because he was the one to play Hitler, because he's also an actor and in a lot of stuff.
Right.
I mean, he's absolutely phenomenal in What We Do in the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Super entertaining. But he just acts in movies. But yeah, so he was hysterical as Hitler. And, you know, everybody was just, it was fun and kind of ridiculous and really over the top. And, definitely an enjoyable film. I was impressed. It was solid. It's definitely.
I've heard that there's some really like emotional.
Yeah, there's a couple
points as well.
Yeah, there are a couple really like heart wrenching moments, and you know I don't want to give it away because it would give a major plot point away. But there's one particular scene that, in the way he shoots it, that it, he addressed it in the Q&A, but it's just really. Smart and works really well, and it's a tough
gut punch.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gut punch. There's a couple of them in the film where they really get you to, and not particularly uplifting moments, obviously, you know, like, but really kind of sad, down pressing moments. I recommend it. I think it's out. I mean, it's a smaller film, so it's not going to be playing in every single movie theater. You might have to search for it a little bit.
It seems like an Oscar buzz kind of a movie, though.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's gotten mostly positive reviews. I think it's at like 69% on Rotten.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's got that going for it. which isn't bad, but there are some mixed reviews, and most of them just kind of say that it's a little too feel-goody for what it's doing.
It made me like Hitler.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. I don't sit there and read tons of reviews, but I didn't really see necessarily anything like that. But yeah, man, I really like Jojo Rabbit. And I like that guy. He's funny.
Cool.
He's really funny. So that's it for the reviews keys. But we got a little bit of news we can talk about. Sony and Disney finally reached a deal. There was that that 3-week dispute that was just all over the internet for 3 whole weeks, that Spidey was out of the MCU.
Yeah.
And they were fighting with each other.
It was a big old like slap
the Hatfields and McCoys. Apparently
they kissed and made up.
Yeah, I guess they kissed and made up, and Spidey will be back. And then I started seeing these like teaser things. I think Tom Hardy's trying to bait a Venom Spidey thing.
Yeah.
That would be actually kind of cool. I love him as Venom. I mean, that movie was terrible for the most part, but it terribly good. Because watching him argue with himself is just so fucking entertaining. It's ridiculous. He's just so... I for some reason, I like that movie. And I know it's not a good movie, but it was just... bad and good at the same time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, there's definitely going to be more of them because I know it made money.
Yeah, and you know, and it makes sense. And yeah, so that you can all rest, all you geeks out there can relax. Well, they already know this, where they're just like, you guys are
idiots. No, this is breaking news, hot off the press.
Hot off the press of 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we do have to see Birds of Prey apparently, because that they made the there was a trailer, so I guess that movie's actually going to happen.
Right.
That's unfortunate. I don't want to see that.
In the self-promotion area, there's a movie I worked on coming out.
What is that?
Right around Halloween time, called Countdown, which is about a cell phone app that is haunted.
Oh, yeah. When is that coming out?
October 25th.
Oh, cell phone haunted cell phone app. Actually, I'll watch that. Totally.
It's PG-13. Should be,
That'll end up bugging me, but I'll still watch it.
It's a horror movie. A week or so after that, Terminator Dark Fate comes out.
Yeah, I know. I'm really looking forward to that. It looks fucking cool.
It does look cool, but they've had kind of a disappointing streak.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know. So we'll see. We'll see how that comes together. I mean, that's just... So, I mean, it's just more sequels.
I can say I hate the song in the trailer. It's like this real sort of melancholy thing. But it does look cool.
Yeah, it does look good.
I don't get what how the new Terminator's different. Like, I've been avoiding spoilers and all that stuff. We're going to
find out how he's souped up.
Yeah.
She's a souped up different type of
Terminator. Well, right. Then they got the bowl haircut chick.
Yeah, she's a Terminator too, but
I mean, totally she seems kind of basically Wolverine, like she had.
I don't know. We'll see, man. I'm down. I'm game. I'll play.
And Linda Hamilton's rocking the old lady look.
Yep, she is looking badass.
She's still hot.
And that little scene in the newer trailer cracked me up with her and Arnold.
Yeah, I'll never call you Carl. That one?
No. I didn't see that one.
Okay, what are you talking about?
The one where he's like, I can see you're upset. Which they open the door and he's standing there and she fires a shotgun in the air.
Okay. Yeah, apparently his name in the movie is Carl.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
All right, Paul Dano playing the Riddler in the new Batman movies.
Not Jonah Hill as the Penguin.
Yeah, he's not playing the Penguin.
No.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. You know, Paul Dano is one of those actors that's actually, he's a really good actor. But he sometimes really bugs me so much.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like him for a while. And then I saw him in a couple of performances. I'm like, oh, this kid can't act. I got to give him that. And he was pretty good. But as the Riddler, I might find that annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You and I got to work with the original Riddler.
That's true.
Early on in our careers.
Yes, we did.
History's Frank Gorshin.
Yeah, he was fucking great. That guy was so entertaining. He passed a while ago, but...
He was a real class act, though.
He was
old-timey Hollywood guy. Yeah,
and old-timey comedian, too. He was one of the biggest impressionists in the world and in Vegas for a long time. Especially during and after that time, he played the Riddler on the Batman show. He was really famous at that point. And he's brilliant. Brilliantly does impressions.
One of the coolest experiences in my career so far was they had Shelley Duvall was in the same movie that we were working on with Frank Gorshin. And they were in between scenes, changing lights and stuff. And Frank Gorshin's standing next to Shelley Duvall, and he just starts going into The Shining.
Amazing.
Because he does... an incredible
Jack Nicholson. He did it to me too. I remember he was in the makeup trailer and he just did Jack Nicholson. Might have been the same
day.
He did Jack Nicholson in the makeup trailer for 20 minutes while they were putting makeup on him and stuff.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
Shelley Duvall standing there watching him go, Wendy, darling, light of my life.
He was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had dinner with him. Him and Mrs. Partridge there. Why can't I remember her name, the actress? She won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wow, that's a bad brain fart. But I had dinner with him one night.
Yeah.
On that shoot. We all went, the three of us went to dinner. And it was
I can remember her character in the movie's name was Bunny.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm blanking on her name. Regardless, it was one of the most entertaining dinners of my life because her husband was a big, her ex-husband was a big, I mean, her boys are the Cassidy boys, and her husband was one of the biggest comedians, so Frank knew him really well.
Sure.
But I guess he was very troubled. And it was just these old school stories and listening to, and they were both hysterical.
Just hamming it up the whole time.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was really bizarre. So yeah. So there's that, the original Joker thing. Riddler. And I guess we should wrap this one up as we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Eventually, when you turn this back on, it will be something different.
That's right.
You know,
because
the pods are hatching.
Yeah, there's a new look and a new flavor. It's Coke 2.
Yeah,
I'm sure it'll go great.
Yeah, not like Pepsi Clear.
Yeah,
no.
Or Zima.
Zima. I think that.
Or the XFL.
Don't you think that Zima is just like, all they did was like, they had so much left over, they just turned it into that like clear hard water stuff. And they just
took Orbeez?
Yeah, whatever they are, I don't know. You know, the hard seltzer water.
Oh. Or
whatever, like with booze. And it's like, God, barf. Anyways.
No thanks.
So there's that.
All right.
Peace.
Later.